Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mliwa Gabaza, and for today, we're just looking back at what happened last night. It is a Friday, which means we get into the top economics news of the week, just looking back at what has happened. And for this week, one of the big issues is the fact that, you know, we had the granddaddy of all family meetings last night. That is the State of the Nation address, where President Cyril Ramaphosa basically lays out the plans for the year ahead in the government and for the economy. And to help us to unpack the issues and what actually came out of the 1.5 hour or so speech, we are joined on the line by Annabel Bishop, who is the chief economist at Investec, together with Davi Root, who is the chief economist at the Efficient Group. I think I'll just start with Annabel. Firstly, greetings to you. And then, we get into that, your first impressions on last night's speech.
Yes, hello. Hi, Madiwe. Look, I think, we always knew the speech was going to start off with a discussion on COVID-19. And of course, you know, the fact that we have so quickly moved to a new vaccine, the Johnson & Johnson one now instead of the AstraZeneca, to meet our new variant is, of course, positive. And we believe that, you know, that remains, that will keep the vaccine rollout scheme to hopefully be quite quick. So, you know, that certainly was a positive straight off. But, you know, having a look at the actual sonar speech itself, you know, pretty much everything in it, I don't think there's anything new or particularly exciting. Of course, you know, the fact that we have stuck to a lot of things we announced previously is nevertheless good. And of course, you know, that obviously includes the infrastructure rollout. And of course, that does take many years, as of course, as well, does the repair at Eskom. And of course, you know, we also looked at, job creation and improvement of the livelihoods of the poor. All of those are quite substantial. But no, I didn't see anything which really referred to the budget. Particularly, of course, you know, the same pressures will apply, but my initial impression was, you know, it certainly sounded quite good, but it didn't really afford us anything particularly new or different. But then, of course, we all know the big issues and problems in South Africa, and we just need to obviously continue to work hard to try and overcome them.
Davi, your take, we're hearing, Annabel saying that, nothing, that we didn't really expect. He really didn't give too much detail on where we're going economically on the budgeting front. Your impressions?
Yeah, hi to you and to Annabelle as well. Well, my first impression was that it was very long, the speech. It was very long. It was difficult sitting through the whole speech. One or two other things. I agree with the top of the agenda point, and that, of course, was the rollout of the vaccine. One would have expected that, and I think this was a long family meeting indeed. A couple of other things that I picked up that I think is also important, and I'm not 100% sure whether this should have been part of the State of the Nation address, but given developments recently, I think it should have been. And I'm referring to the contempt of the constitution that we're currently seeing by some of the senior members in the ANC. Things that what's happening around Zuma, for example, Ayesma Gashule, some comments that even Jesse Duarte made and so on. And even the president himself saying that Jacob Zuma should be allowed to think about whether he's going to appear in front of the Zondo Commission or not. Now, the reason why that is important is because the constitution is a set of rules. The constitution is actually, it's very important because that tells us whether we can actually trust and believe in the policies of government. And if the constitution is something that we adhere to whenever it suits us, and sometimes when it doesn't suit us, we simply ignore it, then of course, there's a lot of questions around things like, for example, policy of government. So that is a big, as far as I'm concerned, something that the president should have addressed. He should have said that the ANC believes in the constitution, and he believes that all the members of the ANC should also respect the judiciary and everything that goes with that. That, as far as I'm concerned, is a big gap in the speech of the president. Then a couple of other things. What very clear to me is listening to the president. If you come from Mars, listening to the president, you've ended up in a country that is growing economically, that is creating jobs, that everything is honky-dory, the economy is doing the right thing, it's going in the right direction, and he really painted a very, very pretty picture of the South African economy. And I think that is just, as we all know, totally wrong. The South African economy is in very, very deep trouble, and I would have liked to see the president actually saying that. And what is important for us now is to have a president that takes the lead to say that we are in trouble because of A, B, and C, that it is going to be very difficult to fix these sort of things. I am your president. It's going to be tough. Follow me. We're going to get through this, and we're going to end up at a better place. I did not get that sense. And maybe lastly, I get a sense of a president that is tired. It's a president that is just putting all his previous State of the Nation speeches together and just scrambled it a little bit, and this one popped out. So nothing really new. There are some specifics that I guess we're going to talk about a little bit, but those are my first impressions.
Well, it certainly does sound, I would understand, you know, the tired part. I'm sure, you know, a man who's used to having one or two family meetings in a year has now become sort of accustomed to doing it every 2 to 3 weeks. And, you know, as you said, the actual reality on the ground is so tough. But I just want to switch over to, I guess, the business implications. Annabelle, do you think, from what was said yesterday, that there's anything that businesses were specifically looking at or actually got, or are we all just sitting and waiting for Finance Minister Tito Mboweni to get up and have his own, you know, version of a family meeting in a few weeks' time?
Yeah, look, we continue, maybe answering the second part of your question first here. We continue to expect no increases in taxes this year. And by that, we even mean that we believe there could be an adjustment for fiscal drag. Previously, in the MTBPS, they indicated there wouldn't be one. And that's how it would raise, you know, an additional $5 billion in revenue. Now, with the potential revenue over collection of maybe even up to $100 billion, although that may be overestimating. But nevertheless, the reason for this is that National Treasury estimate for revenue collection for the current fiscal year of 2020-21 was dropped to 1.3 trillion from 1.5 trillion. And of course, now we might come out a little bit higher than that. And that, of course, that revenue overrun is, I expect, to be used to fully fund the vaccine rollout, but also obviously to prevent us from needing to have tax increases in the fiscal year going forwards. And as a consequence, and hopefully we do get that revenue overrun, but it's important to note that that was only based on 3 quarters worth of data. And of course, the last quarter could disappoint. Nevertheless, if we do get it, you know, that should be a positive, but one would really hope that we would use it to reduce the debt trajectory. I think this is the big elephant in the room we haven't talked about. South Africa's massive, overwhelming, borrowing trajectory, very high level of debt. You know, we're dropping down the credit ratings very quickly, and that imperils the country's future, both from an expenditure perspective on civil servants, but also from a business continuity and sustainability perspective. You know, if you keep losing your credit rating, it has implications for large businesses, for the banking system, but it also, of course, has implications for the cost of borrowing, for interest rates. And the fact that we seem to be losing credit rating so rapidly and with almost impunity, and it wasn't addressed at all in the State of the Nation, the need to cut expenditure, mm-hmm. you know, the need to cut the bloated civil service. In fact, if anything, you know, I note having a comparative look at the economic recovery and reconstruction plan in the middle of October last year, you know, a lot of detailing going on about goals and plans. And of course, you know, what's been achieved so far, you know, the past, you know, 3 or 4 months has really just been mainly more employment on the government, civil service side, you know, employing people on the expanded public works program, but also, of course, as well, the creation of more committees and funds and, you know, more diagnostics and plans. We're still not providing implementation. And, you know, that was the big driving point of this ERRP. And of course, you know, that's what's disappointing for businesses in this budget. You know, they talk about the one, I can't even remember what the figure is, but the sum now for support to businesses, you know, the loan guarantee scheme, the small micro businesses, medium-sized enterprises, you know, it's difficult often for them to access it. But also, of course, as well, the reality is that that's not what's needed. The reality of what's needed is a strong, fast-growing economy. So I was disappointed about the sonar. And by that, I really mean that we need to see a lot of regulatory reform that actually reduces the length and tedium of interaction that has to take place between the private sector and state bureaucracy, the regulators. that really is, you know, where we're sitting at the moment in South Africa, while we are not dramatically increasing our ease of doing business. Yes, you know, we're trying to fix a few areas here and there, but, you know, if we want to really eradicate corruption, that again was a theme running through the sonars. Darby said, you know, you can search for certain words and they come up in every single sonar. So it almost seems like it's the same speech over and over again. You know, if you really want to reduce corruption and bribery, you know, that's one key area the World Bank highlights, that you need to reduce inefficiencies in the bureaucracy in a state. And obviously the interaction of the private business sector and the regulators, because it takes so long and it's so slow. There's huge opportunity for bribery and corruption. And you know, these are the areas I was hoping would have been addressed in more specific detail as opposed to just generally mentioned.
Perhaps as a quick follow-up, you know, to what you're saying, if you're a ratings agency or, you know, international bond investor or someone who's just looking at possibly allocating some funds to South Africa, you know, probably through the JSE or, you know, some other conduit, do you think, you know, yesterday's speech provides enough calm in the markets, or once again, you know, he was saying more of the same? And that is, and I'm highlighting that point because you did say that our, you know, credit ratings are, seem to be, you know, just, you know, rushing down the stairs.
Look, I think that it wasn't an inspiring speech to entice foreign investment to our equity market. But, you know, from a bond market, you know, the other arm of the portfolio assets, if you will, foreign investors, you know, have been actually very interested in emerging market assets, bonds, particularly this year, you know, the last quarter of last year to some degree as well, because there's a global financial risk on, you know, sentiment sweeping markets. And of course, that has really seen appetite into commodities, commodity currencies, and into portfolio assets of emerging markets here. South Africa, as we said, more specifically, it's bond market, not so much as equity market, because of its very poor, still very poor growth prospects. So my answer to you is, I think no. You know, the answer to your question is no. I think instead, rather, it's the general diminution of risk aversion in global financial markets, because they've been driven by positive sentiment on global growth expectations and the rollout of vaccines, the hope of returning to normal. Of course, don't forget the very large fiscal stimulus package coming through in the United States, and of course, very low interest rates for a long period of time as well, anticipated by global monetary policy. And, you know, don't forget as well also moderate inflation, you know, more modest inflation going out now, for because we haven't finished the vaccine rollouts. You know, the recoveries haven't actually fully happened yet. And of course, you know, demand then still suppressed, risk of, you know, further lockdowns. All of that then feeds into perhaps a lower inflation trajectory for the next few years than the one we've come through. All of those quite supportive of, you know, bond markets, emerging market debt. And that has really been the key appetite. No, I don't think his speech in any way would have provided any type of comfort to the credit rating agencies.
Darby, your take, I can hear that you want to, you know, come in on this one.
Yeah, no, I agree with Annabelle. I think it was pretty much a non-event. I don't think it was really anything, a speech that's going to move anything in either direction. But there are a few things. So if I just can touch on one or two things that Annabelle said previously, and one has to do with taxes. Yes, I think there's a good possibility that the Minister of... When you talk about tax increases, Annabelle, I guess what you mean by that is that you're talking about the possibility of a new kind of tax, like, for example, an increase in personal income taxes or maybe a wealth tax or something like that. And I agree with you.
Yeah, maybe any taxes, Darvi, you know, and by that, by even including that scope, and obviously we may be being overambitious, but, you know, less on the increase and even less increases on the sin taxes, the fuel levies, all of those, because those are also very helpful to the consumer and economic recovery. But yes, no, I totally agree with you, Darvi. We're not expecting any income tax increases, and I'm hoping not any, as you said, new wealth tax increases this year either, or corporate tax. In general, the taxes should really, as much as possible, be left alone to try and stimulate recovery.
Yeah, well, I do believe that some of the smaller taxes will be increased, but there's still a possibility of some sort of, But the point I want to make is that whether we increase taxes now or not, it doesn't really matter, because taxes will be increased sometime in the future, because if you look at the debt levels, it's become completely and totally unsustainable, and the day will come when we don't have a choice but either cut back on state spending, which we're obviously not going to do because of the political reasons, or increase taxes. And I think it's become inevitable that the day will come when we have to start increasing taxes. We have to remember that if you're running a fiscal deficit, that is simply a postponement of taxes. You will have tax increases eventually. But one or two comments about what the president, and I just want to point out on a total contradiction that I've picked up. And a few days ago, we heard that the minimum wage will go up. We heard that there's a huge increase in the minimum wage in agriculture, as an example. The president spent quite a lot of time in explaining and really saying all the opportunities and possibilities and everything that can and in agriculture. And are we going to use agriculture as really for empowerment purposes and all that? But there's the contradiction. How is it that the president really encourages everybody to buy locally? How is it that he's pointing to things like, for example, agriculture, where we're going to have all this wonderful economic growth and everything that goes with that, but at the same time, increasing the minimum wage by double figures, as an example? That's a contradiction. You can't do this. I mean, and that's a glaring contradiction of government policies. What do they really want? Do they want economic growth in an environment with very high levels of unemployment? We've lost more than 2 million jobs. Yeah, you cannot have your cake and eat it. And that is, unfortunately, one of those examples of a contradiction in government policies.
And maybe if I can just quickly add there as well, because Darby makes such an important point. You know, this is almost a very strange event, because these massive increases coming through minimum wages are coming through at a point when corporates can't affect, or maybe the word corporate is wrong, because then you think of a large entity, where businesses can't afford them. You know, small, medium, micro businesses can't afford them, and households as well. And it actually tends to result in increased unemployment. You know, that is something that I'm quite surprised by. Yes, obviously, everyone would like to be earning higher remuneration. And yes, obviously, you know, higher wages and remuneration does tend to be a driver of economic growth if you have the other factors in place. But in South Africa, you know, we find ourselves in such a fragile financial environment for households, for businesses, for, you know, sole proprietors, small businesses, that, you know, increasing their cost base substantially. And for many businesses, their staff are their major cost base. And also increasing it for households is likely to result in increased unemployment. And that's what I'm finding strange. At the same time, government's still falling into the trap where it continues to look to lift employment through increasing, you know, employing more people in the public works program, all of those areas as well. So I didn't see, and maybe this is a big criticism of the SONAR, any real effort to stimulate employment creation in the private sector and obviously private business sector activity. And I agree wholeheartedly with Darby. Yes, we may avoid tax increases this year, but we're not going to avoid them down the line, big substantial ones. And that's just going to feed into the suppression on private business sector activity, economic growth, and it's going to cause economic growth to slow even more. I mean, economic growth fell from above 3% in the last decade, the 2010s, to, you know, close to 0.5% in the 2019. And during that period, we had massive increases in taxes. Now, if we're just going to continue that trend, I don't know where government expects to see stronger growth coming from.
You know, as you guys are talking, there's a thought that comes to one's mind, and it's that because we do need to talk about where the budget is likely to go in a couple of weeks when Tito Mboweni takes the stage, our finance minister. And, you know, just coming off of what both of you have said, I'll just start off with Darby on this one. Do we run the risk, just coming from, you know, both your comments, do we run the risk of there being tension between I guess what's seen as social spending in the economy versus populist rhetoric or populist moves economically with how the purse strings are managed. You know, because at the end of the day, a lot of these people are elected officials and they need to be seen to be doing things that will, you know, help the everyday person who's walking into Pick n Pay or just trying to put food on the table.
Yeah, okay. Well, there were a couple of announcements by the president, like, for example, the extension of the grants and the TERS support scheme and all that. So there's some additional spending. And maybe I can just also just touch on what Annabel said, referring to the better than expected tax revenue the last couple of months. I'm not so sure that that will be sustained. I think there are a lot of reasons why we've seen this huge increase or that unexpected increase in taxes. And I still think that the last couple of months is going to disappoint in the current financial year. Remember, we still have the financial year only ends at the end of March. And I still believe that we're going to see a huge and a massive fiscal deficit. And it doesn't matter whether it's 12% or 17%, it's big. It is very, very big. Reading between the lines, I think maybe just this comment, I would also like to know what Annabel thinks of that. What we've seen in recent months is that Tito Mboweni is being sidelined. In fact, he's been saying all along that he's got to stick to within his line. And clearly what has happened is where the Minister of Finance previously was a very senior member of cabinet, it still is the case. I've got the sense that the actual fiscal decisions are not taken by the Minister of Finance anymore, really, but it's moved to a large extent to the presidency and specifically to two individuals, and that is the president and Minister Pravin Gordhan as well. So I've got a sense that Tito Mboweni is really sort of fighting is a lone voice in darkness, trying to rein in state spending. It's not very successful with that. But clearly, the president did announce some of these extensions, which is likely to affect the fiscal deficit, as an example, which apart from perhaps changes on how much money we're going to collect in terms of revenue, that which will affect total state spending as well.
Annabel?
So I certainly agree with Darvi. You know, I've been getting the same feeling for the last couple of years now, essentially that it does feel as though Tito Mboweni is not having as much power as you should have in the government financial space and the fiscal space. You know, you certainly saw very little take up of his growth plan that he puts forward a couple of years ago. And of course, you know, now obviously having a look at the dynamic that Darvi brings up with the president and Pravin Gordhan, I find that incredibly worrying, because let's not forget that Pravin Gordhan was the finance minister that presided over the massive deterioration in South Africa's government finances from the very healthy state that the Thabo Mbeki presidency had them in. Through the Zuma years, Pravin Gordhan presided over the huge deterioration in government finances, which brought them to their knees, of what we had at the start of last year. And then, of course, COVID-19 just deteriorating that situation further. So, you know, I feel that Pravin Gordhan has never been one to control the purse strings. He's never been one to bring in fiscal consolidation. In fact, he's always, you know, done the exact opposite. And, you know, the largesse continues, whether it's the increase, obviously, in minimum wages in the private sector, which, again, I believe will lead to an increase in unemployment, which is really should be the opposite of what happens. But particularly on the finance front, on the budget front, you know, I agree that the revenue overrun is probably going to be less than 100 billion, but hopefully we do get some to try and bring some consolidation. But the point I want to make is that I worry it's going to be wasted. You know, instead of using it to bring down debt to obviously reduce the deficit, you know, if it does come in at that amount, if they do show it, but obviously to bring down debt and, you know, to fund the vaccine rollout and other current expenditure, they might waste it instead on yet again giving increases to the civil service, you know, to the public servants. Yeah. And that is a huge risk, because, you know, you saw that massive backlash. Pravin Gordhan's always caved in. You know, he caved in at SA, at Eskom. You know, they got the big salary increase they all demanded. They never stood up to the unions. And, you know, yes, I know President Ramaphosa is trying to be in for the long haul for the second term. And I know, obviously, he needs to try and meet everyone's expectations of consensus president, but, you know, not standing up now to try and consolidate your finances, I believe, could actually result eventually in South Africa seeing some form of debt default. And that's actually the worry I have, that we escalate quicker down the credit rating ladder. We eventually get to the C grades. I mean, we're already at the double B minus, dropping into single B. We could get quickly through that into C grades. After that's D for default. I don't think our government has any urgency whatsoever. I don't think it worries about it or cares. And I don't think it even is concerned. You know, there's a massive mistrust and a negative attitude in in many parts of the ANC and political parties in South Africa, coalitions against multilaterals, against the World Bank, against the IMF, etc. And, you know, you see that obviously coming through in their negativity towards an IMF loan, but more particularly they worry about these multilaterals getting control of South Africa. Now, that comes through again also in the World Bank, where they try and present a set box, a box of tools to obviously improve the ease of doing business to, for us to get substantially faster and quicker economic growth. And instead of actually, you know, applying ourselves to them necessarily, we continue to do things that just cost a lot more and don't create fast economic growth. So I worry that, you know, Darwin is 100% right. And Pravin Gordhan continues to, you know, push forward this situation of, I don't know even know what you'd call it. I mean, I don't know if you call it fiscal wastage, but such a massive amount of expenditure that we just can't afford.
I think I can hear that Davi wants to respond, but in giving the response, we need to touch on one more thing before we end off the discussion. So as you're responding to what Annabelle is saying, Davi, the one big elephant in the room is just load shedding. We've been talking about it, but as the year has started, I don't think we've seen a January or a January into February period where there has been this much load shedding in the last couple of years, and it just seems to have now become a fact of life. So I guess the question is just about, I guess, management and dealing with what has just become a way of life.
Yeah, that's actually a point I wanted to make. And that, but before I get to that, I just want to make a quick comment on what Annabelle has just said. And I agree totally. I think we're going to go down to from the B's to the C's and so on. So down is around the further downgrades at this current trajectory in which we are on. I'm not too concerned about default eventually. I think I'm more too concerned about possible inflation going forward. But that's a bit of an academic debate. It doesn't really matter. But I think the president missed an opportunity here when it comes to Eskom. He did announce that they are in talk with stakeholders to increase the amount of electricity that the private sector can generate without going to a minister to get a stamp or something somewhere. But I think he should have made an announcement now. It would have been so much different if he said, listen, you can generate as much as 100 megawatt, for example, without getting permission from a minister somewhere. Because inevitably what's going to happen now, there will be talks and talks about talks and other talks to talk to stakeholders, and they're not going to come to some sort of agreement soon, because there are so many different parties in this whole process to eventually make a decision. This was an opportunity for the president to say, listen, if you want to generate your own electricity, go for it. You don't need permission. And he missed that opportunity, I believe.
Annabelle, I think load shedding from our previous discussions and Eskom has been, you know, something that you've been looking at, you know, for a while. Your thoughts?
Yes, absolutely. You know, it's not just, you know, quite rightly, as you say, load shedding. It's also obviously connectivity to the grid, you know, how quickly businesses can get connected to the grid, how much it obviously costs. And of course, you know, the transmission itself, the generation of the lines, the debt at Eskom, you know, the massive debt, the financial implications that has for the country. You know, if we worry about our debt levels escalating to 95% of GDPR ratio by 2025-26, let's add in the state-owned companies' guarantees, and that takes us over to 100% for total country debt. Now that's a big worry for government finances. Again, you know, I agree with Davi. There isn't much detail on what we're going to do in this sonar to sort out the debt at Eskom. You know, it's all very nice to hear that, yes, we're definitely absolutely going to sort it out. But, you know, we never really get the specifics that we need. And that's such an important point made by Davi. You know, why not let the private sector generate as much electricity as it possibly can without all these endless government restrictions and regulations? And I think, you know, to end off, this is my massive problem. I think half the reason we find ourselves and the problems we have with Eskom, but also with other SOEs and generally with government, is that there's this massive increase in government control, power management, you know, of the economy, but it's resulted in a massive upswelling, overwhelming, incredibly burdening, suppressive regulations, which are so inefficient and don't help the businesses, you know, do business really easily and quickly, which is what creates economic growth and employment. This is what government always, you know, just does not actually get to, and it didn't get to in the sonar last night either. If you want to have government revenues, you know, that are sufficient to meet expenditure, if you want to have strong economic growth, if you want to have everyone employed in the country, you need to have the private sector driving it. You need to reduce regulations on them and have regulations in place to protect workers, you know, to protect malpractice in business, to protect people, but not to suppress business, you know, through lengthy, endless processes where people are trying to even just get their IDs, you know, they're trying to get their passports, where people are trying to obviously get environmental impact assessments, people are trying to get construction permits for building. I mean, if you look at the councils have now started opening late in the mornings, closing early in the afternoons, having long lunches. It's so difficult to get your approvals passed. How are we supposed to get our construction sector get up and going? You know, that suppresses business activity. It suppresses employment. These are such obvious points, and government just ignores them and continues to focus on the government machine. And that, for me, is the big issue here. And I believe most of the electricity problems, you know, have fallen into that area. But now, obviously, we're trying to resolve and sort them up. But again, not with resorting to the private sector, again, resorting to what government can do, as opposed to allowing the private sector to now take over and generate as much electricity as possible immediately.
Davi, as we end off the discussion, you know, we just want to end off on, you know, to see if there's any positivity or any rays of light in this storm that we are in. So are there any positives or anything that you are looking forward to from either what was said last night or just generally for 2021?
Yeah, sure. I think there are a couple of things that I think couple of bottlenecks that the president sorted out, or at least uncertainty that he removed. One is that I think this 200 billion support package by the banks, this loans, that the criteria for qualifying there, I think, will be changed, which is a good thing. Will make it easier for business to get loans, especially for smaller business. That certainly is a good thing. A couple of other things, I think it's inevitable, the extension of the grant. I'm not arguing whether it's good or bad, but at least, and also TERS, at least it's there. And now we know about this. It was pretty much expected, but it removed uncertainty. And then, of course, the announcement of a new anti-corruption body. It's always a good thing, but why a new one? We've got existing ones. Why don't the existing ones work properly? But I think that the urgency and the emphasis of the president is certainly that we really have to do something about corruption. The real question is, are we going to do something about corruption? But the intention of the president is certainly there, and the intention certainly is a good one.
Annabelle, your take, any positives in life, in the economy, or anything that you're looking at?
Davi mentioned quite a few. And of course, you know, quite key is that we are actually, you know, moving towards improving the ease of doing business. And I think, you know, that's something we do need to also be positive about. From the point of view there, what I'm saying is that, you know, we're seeing increased use of electronic platforms. Obviously, we already have e-filing. But of course, you know, the business support platform, you know, obviously where you can you can go online to set up a business quickly and easy. I mean, we know that that's very positive as well. What we need to now obviously see is more of that, and obviously people being able to, you know, apply for their passports, IDs, etc., online, and being able to get those electronically. The same for obviously business permits as well. And I think it's a positive that we are moving in that direction, because across the world, that's what countries certainly are doing, that are seeing fast economic growth and improvements. And I also think, you know, it's quite positive as well for South Africa that we are seeing this rollout program quicken, and obviously, you know, happen as government has previously pronounced that it would. And of course, with the global economy itself also improving it, and their vaccine rollouts quickening, again, that's a very positive outcome. You know, also, obviously, there's a lot of business opportunity and new businesses that are coming through. And perhaps something we shouldn't forget, that while COVID-19 obviously has had a very dire impact on the economy, many of the companies that obviously went into business rescue, a lot of them were companies that were battling anyway with the change, you know, to the fourth industrial revolution. You know, obviously, we look at some companies that previously were, you know, selling CDs, and, you know, that obviously is something which has now moved to the electronic space. You know, obviously there's been the impact in terms on books, on cinemas as well. You know, all of those, unfortunately, have been part of the change, you know, to the fourth industrial revolution. But with it comes the positives, you know, of the assistance it gives to economic growth, and of course, obviously, the improvements that we see in agriculture and many other areas of the economy by using this technology. And for me, that technology is obviously a huge positive, and South Africa needs to use a lot more of it in general and roll out technology in a lot more areas. And I think that could be a good growth point for us going forwards.
As an economics nerd, I've just lived my best life for the last half hour. So thank you so much to our guest. That was Annabel Bishop, who is the chief economist at Investec, together with Davi Root, who is the chief economist at Efficient Group. You know, both of them just reflecting on last night's State of the Nation address, just talking about, you know, the things that were missing and the tone that the president took. Obviously, he's in a difficult position, but a lot of the things that he was saying have actually been heard in previous years. We now look to Finance Minister Tito Mboweni's budget speech, which is set to come out in a few weeks' time. And they're just saying that there's a lot of issues that were not raised last night that both businesses and the public sector will be looking out for in that speech. But also just, you know, ending off with some positivity, saying that yes, it is true that the government has been able to make inroads on some of the issues, such as the ease of doing business. So that's been it for this edition. Thank you so much to our guests.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
A very fascinating discussion with, you know, two very well-learned economists in South Africa. Always enjoy engaging on all of these issues. I really liked, you know, the way that the discussion went, you know, just talking about the different issues, looking at SONA last night, together with implications for the business, and then forward-looking to the upcoming budget. And, you know, just looking at it, one can't help but to, you know, just focus on a couple of issues. The first one is load shedding. It really is just one of those things where we need to just accept that this is a way of life. And rather than doing the reactionary sort of load shedding that we've now become used to, rather give people a month's notice, right? It's clear that at the moment the national power utility is unable to meet demand, and the fact that there are a lot of breakdowns happening, there are a lot of issues. So instead of that, you know, why not give people the ability to plan their lives properly instead of waking up to see what's on Twitter or to look on an app? That does help to some extent, but from a business planning point of view, organizational planning, people just going about their day-to-day lives, because it does have a lot of implications. I can just give a quick example where, you know, if you are not at home and there's possibly two bouts of load shedding, you've gone away for the weekend and there's possibly two bouts of load shedding, and you come back and some of your electronic devices at your house have been fried because of potential power surges and issues like that. That's something that's going to put you as a household out of budget trying to replace some of those things. And on a very micro level, on a day-to-day, you know, this is what people are going through level, those are just some of the issues that people have to face. If you're a small business owner, a barber, for example, who needs electronic shavers and shears to do, you know, their work, if they know when electricity is going to go out at least a week in advance, you can plan your hours, let your clientele know that you're not going to be open during these times simply because there will be no electricity for you to conduct your business. So I think more clarity just needs to be, you know, given. If load shedding is going to be a way of life, let people know a bit more in advance that this is what's going to happen, and, you know, just so that people can plan. And then the other one, as we're forward looking to the speech, is just going to be around how is Finance Minister Tito Mboweni actually going to be able to fund the necessary expenditure that the government, you know, has to have. And if you think about it from that point of view, he can either borrow from international organizations, the IMF, etc., that we saw last year, or there can be a reallocation of the budget, something else that we saw last year. And the government is stuck between a rock and a hard place. There's a lot of expenditure, increased social spending. There is a vaccine program that needs to be funded. All of these issues at the same time, trying to make sure that tax collections stay or either stay at current levels or at least beat 2020 levels, and that, you know, you come into cigarette sales, alcohol sales, all of these things. The economy just needs to be stimulated. So we wait to see what the finance minister Tito Mboweni has to say. But, you know, like what Davi and Annabelle said, at least there are some green shoots. There is some positivity. A lot of doom and gloom, but we can't ignore the fact that there are some strides being made, especially on the front of the ease of doing business in South Africa. And that's been it. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the Podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter, where #BDSpotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you so much to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gabaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.